All right, so just to basically give you a quick scenario of where Rhode Island stands, through March 23rd of 2010, we had 552 confirmed cases of H1N1, 241 hospitalizations, and 10 deaths. And now I know a bunch of you are asking, what can we learn from Rhode Island? Rhode Island is such a small little state. But Rhode Island, if you think of it, is very comparable to the size and nature of most states' counties. So if you look at the lessons learned from us, you can apply them to your counties. We have one health department that services 1,200 square miles and just over a million in population. We have 39 cities and towns within that area, 35 school districts, of which there are 420 schools, which includes public, private, and parochial. So, looking at the H1N1 campaign, the first thing that we decided is that it was pretty clear that we had to come up with a task force that would be able to be solely focused on the vaccination needs for the state of Rhode Island. The team would be consist of representatives from all necessary programs in health and some key external partners. The vaccine task force was embedded into our incident command structure, and the vaccine task force was to set the initial task of creating a vaccine plan and with clear objectives and goals. So, in order to achieve our objectives and goals, we had some primary assumptions that we had to work off of. The first assumption was that we would focus on the CDC Tier 1 priority groups more or less simultaneously. Those groups being pregnant women, caregivers, and household contacts of children younger than 6 months, children and young adults ages 6 months to 24, healthcare workers and first responders, adults 24 to 65 with chronic medical conditions. A couple other assumptions, vaccine would be available in mid to late September. Vaccine supply would be plentiful and predictable beginning in October. The CDC estimates of 40 million, 80 million, or 120 million dose boluses. Everyone would require two doses of vaccine, and that we would see a resurgence of H1N1 disease mid to late October. Anybody want to venture on how many of these assumptions came true? There it is. So. That wasn't supposed to be in there. One of the key goals with regards to our, one of the key strategies with regards to our plan was that we would ride the rails as much as possible. What we mean by riding the rails is that we would utilize whatever programs and protocols that already exist in the childhood and adult immunization programs as best we could. We would also tap into our relationships that we have with our external partners throughout communities and education and so forth. That wasn't supposed to be there, okay. Our final but flexible plan to vaccinate as many Tier 1 people as possible, as quickly as possible, was put into place by mid-September. What I'm gonna be talking about for the rest of the presentation is basically the first two elements. Children 6 months to 4 years of age through pediatric offices, and K through 12 school-age children in school-based clinics. Children first. And some of these were deleted and they're still there. Okay, looking at our school-based clinic partners, we knew that we could not do this alone, that we had to bring in some very key partners to work with and give them some key responsibilities along with the Department of Health. So we had the Rhode Island Department of Education, which were with the list of registered schools, superintendents, principals, and they served as our liaisons to the school, through the school districts. Schools and school nurse teachers who would coordinate, distribute, and gather consent forms, and they were familiar faces to greet and meet parents and children at the clinics. The Wellness Company is our local vaccine distributor. We use them whenever we find a need that McKesson cannot handle. And at this time, we knew that it was going to be imperative for us to have a local distributor to coordinate and distribute the vaccine on a timely manner for each one of the clinics as they were scheduled. They would also be the administrators of matching consent forms to dose counts on how many vaccines were administered at each one of the clinics. Medical Reserve Corps. This was a volunteer corps of nurses, EMTs, and doctors, and they were the individuals that administered all of the vaccines at each one of these school clinics. And then the pediatric practices. The pediatric practices had to be 100% committed to support the plan that we put in place and had to hold the line. And I'm going to talk about holding the line in just a minute. And then we had the EMA, emergency management agencies and municipalities, which had to coordinate crowd and traffic control for these scheduled clinics. So the school-based clinics, you know, the task at hand. We were looking at 420 schools, just over 165,000 students to be vaccinated in 28 days in order to complete the first dose by Thanksgiving. With limited vaccine availability, we knew we were going to have to stockpile the vaccine early. We did a randomized list of schools, and we decided we were not going to chase the outbreak. There were a couple of schools that had students who had died from the virus, but we chose that we were not going to alter our schedule of events. We were not going to chase the outbreak. Holding the line. What this meant is that there were certain policies and procedures that were put into place and we could not bend. If we did, then we would lose control of these clinics. One of the first policies was that children would only be vaccinated at the school they attended. They could not bring in their siblings, they could not bring in relatives. Pediatricians were only to vaccinate children under kindergarten age until all clinics were completed. Basically, we told pediatricians, you're going to get enough vaccine to handle your under five population. If you use the vaccine for school-age children, you're cutting your inventory for those under five. So they had to be committed 100%. They had no problem with it as long as they could turn people away and say it's because the Department of Health told us we cannot vaccinate your child, of which we received many phone calls, and we were able to sustain and hold the line on that fact that they were not able to vaccinate them until the school clinics were done. Children who missed their clinics due to absenteeism or for whatever reason would have to wait until all school clinics were done, and then they could go to their pediatrician's office to get their vaccines. Communications is key. In order for this campaign to be successful, we knew that we had to have a clear and regular communication with all of our partners and the providers. Provider and partner updates were sent out via email on a regular basis, 1 to 3 times per week, and they were also published on the state health website. Time for action, okay? Each partner had a key role in pulling off this major production. Health and its role as director would oversee the campaign. We needed to develop and implement a randomized schedule of school clinics, making sure to evenly capture all communities and grade levels. We needed to manage our McKesson inventory of vaccine in order to stockpile the necessary doses to complete the campaign. We did not release any vaccine for any other providers until we had at least 50% of the necessary vaccine for the school campaigns in inventory. Health also made sure to gather data on a daily basis to track and modify plans as necessary. School superintendents, principals, and school nurses were responsible for gathering consent forms from each child, as well as coordinating and setting up the flow of the clinics. It was decided early that having the school staff at the clinics as greeters would be helpful by giving parents and the students a familiar face as they walked in the door. The wellness company would pick, pack, and ship all of the vaccines to the MRC, the Medical Reserve Corps, and who would then take the vaccine to the locations of where they were going to be holding their clinics. The wellness company also was responsible for reporting all doses that were administered to children to our state registry. These are some of our targets. And now that we had completed these clinics, we had for our kindergarten through 12th graders, 165,000 plus individuals. We had for children under 5 years of age, just over 52,000. K through fourth graders for the second dose, just over 46,000. What were our outcomes? I'll let you be the judge whether or not we were successful. 120,000 or 73% of our K through 12th graders were vaccinated at school clinics. 73% or 38,000 of children under five were vaccinated at pediatric offices, and 75% of K through fourth graders received their second doses through school clinics as well. Just to go over a couple of other quick outcomes, birthing hospitals, we, in order to meet the need for pregnant women, we included the birthing hospitals into our distribution plan. They served as a distribution depot where OB practices would pick up their vaccine from the birthing hospitals. They were there on a regular basis anyway. We felt it was easier for them to pick it up from that location than to have to send it to all of the different practices throughout the state. Demand was high in the community, and our outcome, approximately 40% of the 17,000 pregnant women we had, pregnant and postpartum women that we had in the state of Rhode Island were vaccinated by March 1st. Colleges and universities. We have 13 colleges, 9 of which are residential. It was an initial 3-week campaign to get them vaccinated before the winter break. Clinics were staffed by the wellness company and by the university health centers. The individual campuses were the hosts, and the outcome was approximately 16% of 64,000 eligible were vaccinated before that winter break. Healthcare workers and first responders. We established what we call a health service region, a healthcare service region. It's basically Rhode Island does not have local health departments. What we did is we tagged 10 of the hospitals that are in the state geographically and made them, basically deputized them as local health departments. So with their help, we were able to vaccinate 49% of our targeted healthcare workers that showed up, that were eligible to be vaccinated at the health service regions. 68% of EMTs and first responders were also vaccinated in these pods. So big picture lesson, and I know I'm running out of time, is that we needed to make sure that we stayed focused on the goal. Keeping everyone focused ensures that the work doesn't become a government project. Consistency matters. We had to set the rules, stick by them, and beware of letting the squeaky wheels get the grease. And accountability. People had responsibilities and they had to be accountable for them. Last but not least, communicate, communicate, communicate. Next steps, evaluation. What can we learn by lessons learned and so forth, and how can we improve for next year for a seasonal campaign? Thank you very much. You got 12 seconds for questions and answers.
Thank you very much, Mark. So I think we're out of time, but I'm sure they will let us stay in the room a little bit for some questions. So I'm gonna give people a few minutes to move up to the mic. Last week I attended a regional meeting that the IOM had that was the first of three, and it was a very interesting meeting. There were a lot of good presentations from a state and a local perspective, and an interesting question that was raised several times during that session was, well, how do we know how we did? And I think it's a really important question, and it's a hard one to answer. And obviously, for Rhode Island, I think it's easy to answer, but I think it's important to keep in mind that it's actually not quite as easy as looking at coverage rates, because we know that demand varied a lot across the country depending on what the situation was in terms of the outbreak. And we hope that we'll be able to figure out some other ways to also, a complementary way to look at this, to be able to figure out, how did we really do? So I see somebody at the mic here.
Yes, hi. A question for Rhode Island. Mark, you made the decision to stockpile for the school-based program to get to a point of 50%. Just wondering, looking back, do you think 50% was a good cutoff? Could you have started earlier, or did you actually start a little bit earlier until you had that amount of vaccine in hand?
We ended up holding for the 50% because the CDC estimates that we had received on a weekly basis were cut each week. We looked at what we were anticipated to receive, and they were cut on average 20 to 25%. So we knew that we had to stockpile at least 50% in order to meet our need, because we did not want to start the campaign and then not have enough vaccine to complete it through the entire 28-day cycle.
I know it's late, so I'll be quick. It's Laurel Wood from Alaska. I wanted to take a minute to say publicly what I think that many of us have been saying privately, and in fact, Sarah alluded to. I want to thank you, Pascal, for the incredible job that you did. You were in an amazingly difficult situation.